Hi, Decoders. This week, we randomly decided to continue our series on fear of substances. This week, I think in solidarity to those of you in class, we're going to look at part three, which we are calling biohacking, longevity crap, fear of food, those kind of substances. Let's explore.
Hi, I'm Kieran Trace. Welcome to Humans Decoded, a story of hobbits, fairies, elves, dwarfs, gnomes, and humans. If you get lost at any point, there is a deep dive on all the different avatars in episode one. It includes notes. Thank you for joining us in a fun little chat about the vast potential of our human makeup.
Hi, Leela. Hi, Cammie.
Hi, girls.
Hi, gang. Hi, Leela and Kieran.
I feel like we're on such a good run with our series of let's crack open some of these long-held myths and just shine the light of awareness on what's actually true. Like, I'm so pumped and ready to crack another nut open.
Nice.
One of those places where we sort of blindly follow belief systems or conditioning is the body and the ways we eat and move, like not questioned at all. And as Kieran said in the intro, over here in our community, we just started the beloved embodiment class, and I see so much control masking as, well, this is just how it is. This is just the way physicality works. And in order to, you know, quote unquote, take care of myself, these are the things I need to do, which is a juicy bit of story to decode. So forza, andiamo, let's go.
I'm the total opposite. I'm like, I don't know what this episode is about. Because my masking works in the opposite way. So instead of control, I'm like, there's no problem because I'm not actually checked in. So I don't really care what I eat. I don't care what time I go to sleep. I'm not tracking anything. But really, it's just a collapse movement. And while it's happening, it generally just looks like a kind of, oh, I forgot, or like a breezing past, or being so on autopilot that I didn't even realize there's a point where I can actually pause and feel, you know, there's like information in the body. There's an opportunity to listen here to the belly, to actually land in the body and let that lead.
Yeah, you know, every year we do this body class, which is, you know, beloved favorite of mine. And sometimes what I hear early on from the students taking it, basically not understanding the brief. And I hear like, well, there were no vegetarian options, so I just had to make the best choice I could. Or like, because I'm regulating my glucose, I, you know, need to make sure that my micros are really exact. I need to get home and count those macros. Oh, I need to eat first thing in the morning. I'm just weird like that, but I have to. And then what I really need is that balance of fat and protein first thing in the morning. And one of my favorite ones, which we absolutely get every single time we run the class, I live far away from the main shops, or, you know, I'm working in the day, so I can't possibly get what I need to eat for my belly. Another version we see a lot is, well, I can't afford to buy groceries every few days, so I'll just do my best and I listen, just doing what I can. Okay, so enough to say that none of this is what was asked for in the prompt for class. These are control voices, like these little intrusive thoughts that pop out as these resistance programs, like these little, let me just say this again. Enough to say that this is not what was asked for in the prompt for class. These are control voices, and they act like these intrusive thoughts popping out as like resistance to the brief. And really what's interesting is because these intrusive resistance thoughts around the body are so unexamined, we think that they're facts and we confuse them with facts. It's incredible incredible how quickly someone can lay out a program for sleep, for managing glucose, for managing a budget, for grocery shopping, for managing your day at work, around like eating or exercise. And it hits on this subconscious level, like this really ripe soil down below the conscious layer that's just ripe with a pain body that's soaking up control so profoundly. Even though maybe on a more conscious level, it's like, well, you know, maybe it could be more open-handed, or maybe I don't know, or maybe there's some real questioning. But I found deeper down, the story is so strongly held and it just resonates control through the body. And I just find that so fascinating.
So do you want to give us the layout of what we're talking about? Like, what is this, Kieran?
Yeah, because when we're fearing a substance, it's, you know, fear can be a type of control. And we don't think of it like that. We don't think that fear is control. And we also don't really examine our eating habits or our exercise or our sleep, stuff with the body, and immediately recognize it as fear, you know? But control is fear. And it's so deeply ingrained in our culture, like really cemented around food. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is the most dangerous substance for any of us to use. It's food. Because, you know, sugar is death, meat is death, carbs are death, dairy is death, junk food is death. You know, feeding your children junk food is death by shame. You know, eating meat is death by shame. You know, like, I feel me just wanting to walk right up onto a soapbox of mine. I just feel myself teetering on the edge of that step. I want to just step up. So like, okay, people, trigger warning. We will talk about eating sugar, seed oils, and meat, even though we claim to be awake beings. Control is the root cause. Control downstream creates deprivation. And deprivation, wow, that is a real killer. That deprivation will kill your joy, it kills your intelligence, it kills your consciousness, it kills your camaraderie, it kills your metabolism. Wow. It kills. Okay, here I go. I'm stepping up on the soapbox. The soapbox is about the story of obesity epidemic. Oh my God. Puke, 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 puke. If we look at the global population and we look at bodies that are larger, we mostly see African Americans, and specifically more of the women than the men. We see the Polynesian people. We see Maori people. And okay, there is science, some science that point to indigenous bodies have a very sensitive metabolic system. It's evolved to allow for periods of starvation. And therefore, when there's plenty of food, it will be stored. It's being stored for the presumed upcoming days of starvation. But this doesn't actually answer. It doesn't actually tell the whole story when we're looking at populations that are largely larger bodies. But a marker that does point to that is stress and trauma. And populations of people that have some of the most stress and the most trauma, like African-American women, we're seeing these large bodies. And, you know, stress disrupts the way our bodies metabolize glucose. And then, so if it's very chronic and very intense, so intense and chronic stress will dramatically shift how we metabolize glucose. When cortisol, the stress hormone, gets spiked, dopamine gets lowered, which is the feel-good vibe, the feel-good chemical drip in our system. That gets lowered. Melatonin, which is your chill-out, calm, gets disrupted also. Vigilance gets really intense in our system, which means that the glucose is being stored to be used by the brain. So most of the glucose coming in is going to be used for the brain. That's where the vigilance is happening, right? That's where that like track for control, which means that a lot of that glucose is not being put into the muscles for the muscles to burn it off. Some bodies are just big because of trauma, not because they ate a lot of bad food. Some bodies are big and they did eat a lot of food because the trauma was huge. And some bodies never get big even though they ate a lot of food. And some bodies never got big and then got big like their stress did and their anguish and their despair. So what would it be like if we saw an obese person and we thought, oh, they must be very resilient because the stress they're carrying is written all over them. And, you know, Kappa is an Ayurvedic system of body types, but it points to that bigger body type, a curvier, organically has like a extra layer of fat. And it's an actual body type, people. It's an actual body type. So basically, what is a body if the media is not so deeply involved in editing and telling us what a healthy body is? What if all kinds of body shapes and sizes are super healthy? What if all kinds of shapes and bodies are struggling with enormous stress and anguish and trauma? How do we respond as a community to this? Okay, I'm going to step off this little soapbox, but sugar, meat, and seed oils are still ahead.
I mean, I certainly hear lots of stories around health when I work with people in private sessions. Like, I need melatonin for sleep. I only need kale and superfoods to balance my gut, to heal my leaky gut. I must do this and that and the other. And I have to eat meat at each meal or my blood sugar crashes. Me has to do so much.
Yeah, me, managing, control. Yeah, I have to exercise for sure. Get out on that walk because I'm going to get fat, you know? Or I can't eat white sugar. We just do honey, you know, like those deli meats, they're for sure going to kill you.
Gosh, if you guys knew how much deli meat I eat each week, it's interesting.
Mine looks like a little shame monkey that just sort of hangs out in my back. So like canned food is bad. I can eat it and secretly enjoy it, but I must carry this little bit of shame to remind me what I'm doing is bad, just so that I don't get too carried away. And insert this for bacon, carbonated drinks, long life milks, bread that comes in a bag, tea bags that have plastic in them, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, like endless.
And, I mean, I have so much compassion for it, because for a long time I was in the same camp, obviously, as anyone. Like, I know for myself, believing in, I don't know, kale or superfoods or my supplements, it can feel like these things are supporting my well-being. It's sort of a routine that makes me feel good, both physically and mentally. So how dare you question it? Well, it's just as we're saying, because more often than not, it's a program that's run from the mind. So there's a ton of agenda in it, as opposed to the actual listening to the moment. And I think that's where the real fear kicks in, because listening to the moment is like listening to this vast unknown field of oneness. Like, I don't know. I don't know what this belly wants, and I don't know what this body needs. I'm just here listening. I'm staying in this awareness of like, okay, whatever signal comes, but I don't have an agenda of what should come. There shouldn't be a signal for sugar. There shouldn't be a signal for deli meat. There shouldn't be a signal for canned ravioli. And I mean, I find it a very courageous stance to have or to, yeah, inhabit, because the fear of the mind or the separate self always wants to grab the program to apply to the moment. Like, what's the story we apply to this moment? How can I know I'm safe if I have the program, if I have the story? If I know this moment, I'm safe, says fear, says my fear. But reality is so very different.
And this is especially true about food, exercise, sleep. We have enormous fears and all kinds of control programs regulating the substances involved there.
Yeah, sometimes when I talk to normies, like people who don't do self-awareness or are just struggling to get by, you know, people I meet in everyday life I work with, like colleagues, and they say, so are you vegetarian or how do you eat? What's your program? And I'm like, well, I just eat whatever my belly wants. And I move when my body wants to move. And they look at me with like sheer disbelief and a tinge of horror in their eyes. They're so shocked. They're like, what? But then wouldn't you always want to eat junk food and never move ever again? And I say no, like the truth is maybe for a moment, yeah, maybe for a couple of months I only eat junk food and no, I don't move because that's the deprivation that needs to be rooted out, exactly. But then the more the baggage clears away, the clearer I can hear the actual signal of my body. And at least that's my experience. Then there's some sort of an organic, maybe routine, maybe it's an organic discipline or a balance even, but you know, the person or my mind, it has nothing to do with it. It's an organic balance that the body or the being does itself. It's very unknown to the quote unquote me.
I feel like I'm fogging out. But that's what my subtle control pattern looks like. It's to check out of the body. And I think it sort of has a long history. So growing up, I was terrified of voicing my needs. And then as I entered classes with Kieran, you know, we're asked, listen to the belly, listen to your body. And it was just abject terror at hearing myself because I was so unpracticed at hearing any of my own needs. And I was just trained or conditioned to please everyone. And I'd just be like, where's the harmony? What's going to disrupt the group the least? And I'll just do that. So every single time that would mean like an abandonment of self. Yeah, it's like over there, it's safe if I do what people want. In which case, I'm going to check out of my own body just so I can do what they want. That was my MO. And then taking the class, had this sort of like, oh, it's just the body class or like embodiment, sure, because what I want to do is get to God, so let's get this part over with so we can get to the real business.
You know, even just now listening to you, Cam, it's like you talk about not voicing your needs as opposed to just the simple hearing your body, which it's a little different, isn't it?
I mean, this is why I'm in the body class again. It's almost like noticing this habit in you or how ingrained it is. Because I did this exact same thing while we were in class on Friday. You know, the invitation was, it was something about the body. I couldn't even tell you what the question actually was. And I was like, yes, yes, yes. And so this is what happens to me at work. This is how I avoid work. And so it was just the same thing of like, let's bring the attention to the body, and then I just bounce out. So recently, all the avoid is very in my face, and it's time to take inventory of this subtle control move. And yeah, this is a nice example of how it kind of started to slowly reveal itself. I was staying at Kieran's villa in California, and maybe for one of the first times, I experienced what it truly felt like to show up for myself on a very consistent basis, to be able to meet the rhythms and habits that my being wanted, and it was from a very organic place. So before that, I don't think I'd ever had a particularly regulated schedule. Maybe it's because I'm a fairy, or because I grew up all over the world, or because of a stressful household where personal needs were basically shamed. But routine was never something I was drawn to, and it just hasn't been a big part of my life. But during these weeks that I spent at Kieran's house, I felt for the first time how delicious and nourishing a set rhythm could be. I'd wake up at 7:30, and it was my favorite thing, going to bed at 9:30. I'd simply stand up, say goodnight, and leave the crew. And there was a beautiful tea and a snack and even a little dance party at 3 p.m. each afternoon, which was exactly the right time for me. Everyone seemed to delight in it when I just started making tea, so it kind of evolved into this daily gathering we had. And then we'd begin prepping dinner at 5:30. And so all these little small markers we hit each day felt novel for me to kind of just announce and implement and kind of be like, this is what my body needs. It was such a revelation and a total exhale, and there was zero effort required to maintain them. The rhythm seemed to support itself, so I wasn't trying to gain anything by sticking to the schedule. It was just very, very delicious for my being. And now, in contrast, all the avoidance is just very exposed, and it's amazing, a little embarrassing to see. I mean, even during this recording, I'm like hazing out. I'm like, whose turn is it? What are you talking about? And so, yeah, this organic up-level that happened has brought up this whole new set of critters to the surface. So hello, little babies crawling.
And when we're pointing to this, like, fear of the substances, right? Like fear of food, fear of indulgence, right? Fear of listening in case there's a need I have and I don't know how to answer the need, right? So these levels of fear that come up, and it's always really difficult to put into words. I mean, we try in the podcast, and I think decoders, you really meet us, hopefully more than halfway, it feels like, a lot of the time. Like you really bring it there, because it's hard to articulate. Because in any of these one, like, because you can have any of these systems, like Leela's saying, like, here's a program, you know, and it's control. And then Cam says, and in my version of control, there's no program. So what are we pointing to? We're pointing to this movement that is deep in the unknown in each moment. And that's where, like, vigilance and control are doing everything to avoid. And then deprivation is placed there as a result, a downstream result. And this is the kind of stress and challenge, not necessarily white sugar or meat or a seed oil or the right macros. You know, I love to talk about my grandparents. They're such a beautiful example of this. My grandmother, well, I'll say that her body type was very lean. As a child, she was skinny. But when she sort of came to puberty, we'd say more lean than skinny. And she was quite tall. I just love her to death. She was a wonderful cook, and she was a terrible eater by certainly today's health and wellness standards. She ate that white bread and she'd have it with soft brie cheese at lunch. And then she'd have nothing but coffee and 1,100 more cups of strong caffeinated tea full of sugar, add a pack of cigarettes a day, until about 5:30, when we replaced the caffeine with cocktails. And by cocktails, I'm talking about brandy, straight brandy. And that doesn't stop till late at night. And, you know, in addition to the brandy, we're going to add some wine with dinner. And this is 7 days a week for 70 years. And the amount of prescription pills would fill a whole dresser drawer. And, you know, I don't really know why she took them. It wasn't like she was in pain or she had arthritis or like she had, like, I don't know. I feel like it's just what they did in those days. you know, like a new fancy drug came up and they try it, you know, why not?
Have some amphetamines.
Sure. And my grandmother never exercised. I mean, it's hysterical for me to imagine my grandmother saying something like, I think we should go for a walk. Or do you think we should go to the gym today? Oh my God, I cannot even imagine it. My grandmother lounged. That was her lifestyle. She had a lifestyle of lounging, but she was fit. You know, she liked to go shopping, not that she did it on any regular basis. She did love to garden, not that that was a real workout. It was sort of a meander, make a good, you know, hole somewhere. But she would follow the gardener about. And she was, you know, strong. If we went to the mall, she could shop until she dropped. Usually I dropped. And in those days, it was many, many years ago. I mean, those days I was an athlete. She could outpace me at a mall. And when she died, which was in her late 80s, I like to say she simply died of boredom. Like, she didn't die of anything, really. She literally just got very bored and stopped eating. And my grandfather, her husband, is another sort of weird miracle. Like, he never slept his entire lifetime. He had an accident as a child when he was young, and he hit his head, and that was never properly diagnosed, and it became a real sleeping issue. He just never slept. In his late 60s, he was studied at the Mayo Clinic for a long time, 2-3 weeks or something like that, and it was legitimately confirmed that he never slept more than 3 hours a day, and some days just 3 or 4 minutes. So he would start to fall asleep, and then his body would shake him awake. And so over the course of the day, he would get these like 30 seconds to 3 minutes of sleep here and there. And in maybe 24 hours, that would create 3 hours like that. Mm. So I have all these memories of my grandfather just walking around all night. Like, he'd wake up in the night to pee, and my grandfather was just wandering around. But he would be wandering around with a box of cookies and a big tumbler of whiskey. So, like, imagine it's 3 a.m. and you're just sipping whiskey and eating cookies, you know? Because you don't sleep and the world is quiet, and it's horrible for him to try to sleep. But this is a man who co-invented jet fuel. Like, he was a sharp engineer. He was one of the chief officers of one of the largest multinationals in the world. Like, he ran that sucker. Nevertheless, whiskey and cookies all night. And, you know, he looked like Alfred Hitchcock, like a very handsome version of Alfred Hitchcock. He was charming and debonair and very good looking, but he was as wide as he was tall. But he didn't have joint problems. You know, he walked all night. He would just walk around and walk around and walk around, sort of pace about with his whiskey and cookies. And he was always this force to be reckoned with. And their daughter, my mother, who is as hobbity as hobbits can hobbit, she smoked half a pack of cigarettes since she was 30 years old. She drinks 1,100 cups of the most caffeinated tea you can imagine, just like her mom. But hers is even thicker, like syrup. She lives on caffeine, white sugar. Like, she eats these little powdered donuts you buy, those processed donuts at the store, and lots of cookies. She, most of her life is rather normal weight. When she got older, sort of past, you know, in her mid-60s or something, she got a little plump, but, you know, cute plump. And she has the most unbelievable energy and endurance. She never gets sick. She sleeps 8 hours a day, every night, solid. Her head hits the pillow. She wakes up the next morning, doesn't remember what happened. And wow, does she have, like go energy. She had 5 of her own children. And at last count, she had fostered about 18 other children. She worked in the schools as a teacher, teacher's aide, with children with autism. Let's just say my mother's a force, just a beautiful force to be reckoned with. And she's sharp as a tack. And then every year she goes to her doctor, she gets a physical, and she says to me, everything was fine. And I say, what doctor in the world does a physical on you, Mom, and says you're fine? You have smoked half a pack a day for 50 years. You are addicted to caffeine and sugar. I don't believe your physical's normal. But you know what? She has energy like a little train engine, and she is an impressive gal. And I'm the granddaughter of those people and the daughter of my little hobbit mom. And even though I'm genetically related to all these people, same cell structures, but with me, if on a Tuesday I eat something that didn't come from my body's joy, I'll be up all night with nausea or possibly sent to the hospital because I'm mysteriously going in and out of a coma. You know, I don't smoke. I don't drink. It's intense. I eat sardines for lunch and beautiful pasteurized free-range eggs. And I can have a heart attack tomorrow. A heart attack tomorrow. Like, fragile is my health. Which has created a different kind of resilience in my life. So here's all the kinds of things. Bodies, man, they're just a field of karma. And most of my people, not much karma. For me, however, karma's central.
Oh, man, I love what you're pointing to, Kieran, which is that health or bodies, it doesn't have anything to do with anything in a way. Like my parents, for instance, or just the way I grew up, we didn't eat healthy. Like that wasn't even something to consider. Is this healthy or not? We always had snacks and desserts, and you know, we had these fudge caramel candies at free disposal. And we never thought about, I don't know, are we having enough protein or is this enough fiber? And let alone eating organic stuff. I mean, it wasn't a thing. Can you imagine in the 90s, there was no organic produce, at least not in the main shops. Like we had these, what we would call like shrewd Körnli Picker shops, like the shops where the few hippies of the village and the Montessori moms would shop, but that was it. The weird tofu stuff. But my mom, for instance, she might be the fittest 70 whatever year old I've ever seen. Maybe she's in the same range as your mom, Kieran. She has no health issues whatsoever. She wears the same size jeans since she's 20. So odd. And she eats whatever she wants. And my dad was the same. So are my brothers. I mean, look at them. My brothers, they eat what most people would consider crap all day, especially Aaron. I love him. And he doesn't eat anything that's even remotely healthy, I think. And he's like the image of the most healthy man there exists on the planet. And he can surf, not like me or Cammy do, for an hour or two. He surfs for 8 hours straight. He's out in the ocean, doesn't get tired. So to me, health seems to be kind of random in a way, and definitely not linked to, you know, my spirulina intake or my bean sprout intake.
I also grew up in the 90s in Latin America, where we would worship anything that was from the USA. So I remember the opening of Taco Bell was a major event, and we queued around the block for it. McDonald's was like heaven. You know, like with the big playpens, we'd hang out there all the time. We used to drink Coca-Cola straight out of the liter bottles, just neck them down. All of my cousins did as well. It was just mayhem around sugar and processed food. It, like, nobody knew. We just loved it and nobody said no. And when I think about it, I can't say that it negatively impacted anyone at all. So no one in my family's obese, or none of my cousins have health issues related to food. None of them are overweight. Nobody has any serious illnesses. I will say this about one of my cousins who later became obsessed with health. On the surface, he looks like a fit person because he always goes to the gym. He's, you know, fixated on his superfoods and raw salmon and whatever, and obsessed with eating clean. He cut out fat entirely, but underneath, it's basically a low-grade eating disorder kind of masked as wellness. And now he's celiac with constant digestive issues and just like layers of control and stress manifesting in the body. But I think if you asked him, he'd be like, I'm the healthiest person in the room. Absolutely.
So I guess what we're saying is that you can eat amazing food by biohacking standards in today's zone, or traditional foods, maybe like, you know, rural with lots of fresh eggs and, you know, dairy that was, you know, milked from a cow a minute ago and fresh slaughtered meat. Or you can be so picky, all you ever want are jelly beans and peanut butter jam sandwiches with a side of Doritos. Like, this isn't going to kill you the way the stories and people will prove the science and prove that it does without actually looking at all of us. Like, look at all of us. And what is going to kill us is the way that deprivation will, which is coming from control. And the control is this just fear of substance. So do we do control? Do we do no story? Or even better, maybe consciousness, which means listening to our bodies. But this is so not easy because there's such a deeply buried root of deprivation and shame controlling our body that we don't catch these subtle movements that are actually the mind controlling the story. And it takes something to not be afraid of food.
Very organically, out of the blue, I wasn't trying to change anything to be better, but my tummy one day was just like, no thank you to dairy. So just no dairy. Dairy dropped, but gummy bears are in. I eat them by the handful.
Yeah, for me, it's mortadella, as you Americans maybe pronounce it.
Bologna. We call it bologna.
You call it bologna.
Bologna.
My beloved mortadella. Yeah, I mean, it's a thing to eat half a kilo a week and not be afraid of it, or to drink recently just half a liter of milk these days. I don't know what this is about, but it's like, okay, the belly wants it, so we'll have it. Even though for a long time I was so convinced I'm lactose intolerant. Turns out it's just a story.
Yeah, if we hold it as a permanent position, as opposed to just what happens to be a movement right now. You know, recently for me, I've done a big swing into canned fish hard. I just cannot get enough. The sardines, the mackerel, the tuna, damn, mussels. Dude, I'm snacking on canned oysters like you would snack on peanuts. I'll also say that while we're recording this, I'm sipping on this superfood protein shake. I mean, dang, it is so expensive. It's made of just like exclusive mushroom mix and all these vitamins and pre and probiotics. And honestly, I think if you put your hand into this powder and just held it for a second, I think you could grow a human. And do I ever love it? Oh my God, my belly craves for it. I want that instead of dinner. But I am very much looking forward to when gummy bears and SpaghettiOs are swinging back in again.
That's it from us this week, decoders. I hope you did a better job of staying with the episode than I did. Although it did start to kind of click into place towards the end, and I can feel a considerate amount of kind of compassion just for everything our bodies deal with. So thanks for coming on the journey with us. And we would love it so much if you could give us a little review wherever it is you listen to our episode.
Please, we're really grateful if you would review it for us. Take a second and do that. Okay, see you
next
week.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. We obviously love hearing what you think. Your feedback helps us make a better show for you to listen to. So feel free to comment, and you can do it at Facebook, which is the Humans Decoded Podcast. And if you're not on social, you can always email any questions to us at outreach@kierantrace.com. And thanks for listening. We love you.